thanks for tuning in to the Undercuts review of the 2025 Chinese Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and enjoy the show.
By being a racing driver, you are under risk all the time. By being a racing driver means you are racing with other people. And if you no longer go for a gap that exists, you're no longer a racing driver.
All right, guys. So, round two of the 2025 F1 season, the Chinese Grand Prix, which was obviously a sprint race weekend. Oscar took his first ever Grand Prix pole, regular pole, of his F1 career, and was able to, essentially keep that until the end of the race. I mean, he didn't really see anything for, we didn't see much difficulty for the whole entire race.
Yeah, he got a good start, squeezed out, Russell. He kind of messed up Russell's start for him because he gave him
enough room.
That's what he's allowed to do. You're allowed to do that. Yeah. Which ended up pushing Russell back to third, and Norris was able to squeeze up into second. But after then, Norris didn't really attack Piastri. I mean, they keep saying that they're free to race. I don't know how much I believe that's true, and it's smart. That I mean, they shouldn't be taking each other off. It's not Nico, what was it, Rosberg and Hamilton back
in Spain
smashing into each other. A great race for Oscar, though. Well managed, or
anyone in Ocon.
I think that with Lando, say he didn't really challenge, but we saw how badly the tires were degrading in the sprint. Obviously, that was, they were on the same medium tire and they knew that they weren't going to go 19 laps on it, or didn't think they were. But just following behind Oscar, you could see the difference in their front tire. After only maybe three or four laps, you could see that Lando's tire was already starting to show a little bit of wear on it. So as soon as you start dealing with that, the person in front's always going to have the better tire. And so if you're leading the race because you got the clean air and you got the better tire, then it's not too easy for anyone to challenge you.
Is that something that's specific to China? I mean, this whole 2 years ago, right, they said we fixed the cars, you can follow closer now, not so much tire deg. Is that just, there's only so much you can do, or is it China because of the way the corners are set up?
I think, well, China, they said they'd resurfaced the entire thing, which gave it a lot more grip. So the times were 3 seconds a lap quicker, I think, this year.
Wow.
Because of that extra grip.
So the grip is there if you want to take it, but by taking the grip, you wear the tire.
You take away the tire.
Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah.
That was the thing with the sprint race, right? It was everyone's tires were just going, and those that could look after their tires the best,
right,
won.
We saw a little bit between Lando and George. I guess it was really only during the pit stops where George was ultimately able to pit one lap ahead with Oscar. And he was able to get ahead when Lando pit on the next lap, and Lance was kind of in the mix there because he was still out on his first tire. I think maybe he started on hard tires.
Yeah, so he went much deeper on his hard tires. He didn't pit till lap 36, whereas we're talking about lap 14, 15.
Exactly, yeah. But I mean, it only took three or four laps for Lando to repass George after that. Yeah, we didn't really see much from the front.
It was good fighting, but
sure.
And then Verstappen was just sort of there in fourth, right? And he never really was in danger of anything happening to him.
Well, he was in fifth for a while, right? Behind Charles.
He was. Oh, right, of course. And then, the Ferraris at the start.
Shall we talk about that start, Martin?
I mean, it was fine. I'm a Ferrari fan, but they find a new way to. Did they mess it up? I think Hamilton improved Leclerc's car for him, didn't he?
Wow,
by taking the front end plate off.
I mean, we'll talk about the incident itself, right? It was as racing incident-y as you could really get.
100%.
Sure, in that Charles was trying to stick it up the inside. He hit a curb and the curb threw him into the side of Lewis. Now, I'm shocked that the tire held up. I mean, it must have got no tire on it at all. It must have been just wholly rim. Because otherwise that, you know, he'd have had a puncture. And yeah, it was, or the additional flexibility that it had by not having the end fence on it. He was touching the floor.
It was definitely bending down. But I mean, I guess what are these things? What do they do? Like you said, there's extra grip out there on the surface. Maybe he was able to use that, but it really didn't seem to impact his car. And he was definitely faster than Hamilton. I don't think that was in question.
No.
At the end.
Although Lewis was questioning it during the race.
I mean, there's definitely something going on with Lewis, right? Because he won the sprint race. You know, he got put it on pole. He had a decent time. And now we know that, you know, since the race in China, they disqualified him for running his car too low in the Grand Prix. But the story I'm hearing is that he ran it lower in the sprint race, but because it was lighter fuel, less distance, that didn't have the wear on the plank underneath. But in the race, they didn't raise it enough. But they didn't raise it enough to be legal, but they raised it enough clearly to destroy the performance that he had in the sprint race. So it's a massive balancing act.
An interesting question though, right? In that, do they get a new plank for the
That's a good question.
For the Grand Prix, or is it, I don't know, it's the same plank and they use it over the sprint and the Grand Prix?
It's a massive piece of equipment, right? The plank. It's like the whole length of the car. I mean, it has these specific blocks on it. I don't know if they measure the blocks specifically, but to be half a millimeter out on a piece of equipment that is, you know, meters long, is the tolerances are tiny. But Ferrari is not arguing. They're saying fair cop gov.
Well, it's the technical regs. It's not the sporting regs. The technical regs are kind of black and white.
Yeah, we certainly have calipers that measure to that accuracy, half a millimeter. So if it's below nine, it's below nine, and off you go. And clearly it makes a difference because his car was faster in the sprint. So you run a lower car, you get better ground effect, faster car.
But it's interesting what you say about the, because there's the fuel in it, and so you have to run it higher to account for the sag with the extra weight.
No refueling anymore. Be interesting then if they, I mean, they're never going to bring back refueling. I think it's too dangerous, but if they did, especially with the ground effect cars now, that you could do more stops, put less fuel in, less weight, run lower. Be an interesting balancing act to see how that would change strategies going forward. But
they still do it in IndyCar and there aren't really fires, so who knows?
Who knows? I guess who knows, but we'll see. But yeah, I mean, fair play to Charles, right? He his front end plate came off, but he drove the crap out of that car, but it was too light, apparently, by 1 kilogram.
Yeah,
I thought it was too heavy.
But that's no, he was too light. You can be as heavy as you want. You can't be underweight because underweight means faster.
Right.
Yeah,
but it's not the weight associated with the bit that came off, because
no.
You take the bit off and you put an identical one on for weigh-in at the end. So even though, but he was running light the whole race because that bit was missing. So I don't know.
Yeah, they used to say. Do they say that anymore? They used to say pick up marbles. You remember? That the race, drive around, pick up as much rubber offline as you can, get it on the tires,
get that
weight up. I don't know how close it was. I mean, a kilogram of marbles sounds like a lot. I don't think you can.
Well, that's what did George in Spa last year, because in Spa you don't go around the whole lap, so he had no opportunity to pick up marbles on his tires
that
normally one would expect to pick up that amount of weight over a, you know, an in lap after the end of the race.
What is
and
that?
He was underweight, and that's why he got disqualified.
What's that amount though? How many grams of marbles can you realistically expect
I think it's a couple of pounds. It's about a kilogram per wheel.
Whoa. Oh,
really?
Yeah.
A kilogram per wheel? That's crazy.
He just needed to pick up more marbles.
Oh, come on. Then I'm all pissed off with Shah now. What are you doing?
Where are you going around? Where are your marble skills, my friend?
Drive through the gravel or something. I don't know. Do something.
Yeah, pick up some rocks.
Drop some scoops. Like those planes that do firefighting. Drop some scoops and like pick up some stones. You know. Come on.
You may be onto something there, Martin.
How do you say gravel scoops in Italian? Yeah. I got an email to write.
They have all the electronics in there. You can just, you know, add a little thing that dips down, scoops them up.
Exactly.
There we go.
Oh, geez. I'm a genius.
Incredible engineering from you, Martin.
What else happened at the beginning? Bortoletto had a fun opening lap, didn't he?
Was he behind Hülkenberg? Hülkenberg just completely took the air out from his car and he spun. You don't see spins like that very often, right?
Yeah.
Maybe during practice as people are trying to find the limits, but you don't usually see that during the race.
No.
And he came in for a pit stop. Did he break something? Did he break his wing or whatever? Bortoletto, I don't know, but he came in for a pit stop then, maybe because he was just like, I'm so far back anyway, I might as well do the pit stop now and then go straight to the
harder. Get onto the harder tire, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the thing about the tires this year is the C2 is much closer in compound to the medium than it was last year. Yeah.
Oh, okay, right.
They changed the gap between the C2 and the C3. Which meant that it was harder than the medium, so more durable, but still gave good lap time. You weren't losing a lot of lap time. And in fact, I think at some points during the weekend, they were saying that people on the hard tire were actually going faster than people on the medium.
Wow. Right. Because on the commentary, they were talking about the tires possibly like going off, but then coming back as you sort of like...
graining.
On the front at least anyway. Maybe that again, that's to do with the track surface having more grip. And of course, my prediction that, you know, Adrian Newey would transform Aston into contenders. I mean, if Alonso didn't have bad luck, he wouldn't have any luck, right? Well, but he binned it in Australia, and then this race, only what, 5-6 laps in, his brakes caught fire.
But Lance has scored in two races.
Yeah, and yet somehow I don't take that as a victory. Like, I'm discounting that. I think Lance is actually ahead of the Ferraris with their disqualification stuff in the overall standing. So maybe, actually, I take it all back. Newey's made the difference. Lance Stroll is the number one driver. I mean, I was talking about it before the season started.
Yeah, and I said that
standings.
I said that Haas was going to catch up in one race, right, and double the points of Sauber in one race.
That's right. We got to go back to the videotape. I was kind of pushing you to, like, you know, stick your neck out when Haas will get points, and then boom, double points score next week.
Yeah, Stroll eighth in the drivers' standings with 10 points.
Yeah,
ninth is Lewis on 9, and 10th is Charles on 8.
Oh my God. And if it weren't for the sprint race, it would be even worse. Behrman, get a little, not cocky's not the right word because all drivers are cocky, but he had this like little chow going.
Yeah. But those moves were really good. The little switchback.
They were
very nice.
I like a good switchback.
You would think that the engineers of the drivers ahead of them would have, you know, let them know that he was doing that lap after lap, passing people. But I guess he kind of like mixed it up. He went on the inside one time and then went on the outside another time. So
sometimes, you know, you can't really defend it. You have to defend one move, but it opens up another, and there's only so much you can do when the guy's coming up that quickly. But yeah, great drive from Behrman. I think I mean, of the rookies, I mean, Antonelli is certainly performing, but he's in the best car of all the rookies.
Sure.
For sure. But Behrman, I mean, great improvement. I mean, on Australia for Haas. I mean, maybe this the wet track was just not good for them, but in the dry, they have some pace.
Yeah, but listening to like podcasts over the course of the last week, the guys at Haas were like shocked how bad their car was in Australia, and it really took them by surprise. They were expecting to be like so much better than that. So coming here, I think it's probably a little bit more reflective of where they think they are, you know, in that, you know, they're on the edge of the points, you know, pushing, you know, a good Q2 car in the right conditions can score some points. Just kind of similar to how they were last year, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, and both Behrman and who's the other?
Ocon.
Ocon, yeah.
He got fifth.
Yeah, with the disqualifications, Ocon ends up fifth, ahead of Antonelli. Right. So,
yes. And I know that he had a really good race. I did not realize he'd finished in fifth.
And your boys, Nick, the Williams guys both got in the points in the end.
It took some fortune, but at one point, though, the birthday boy, Mr. Alex Albon, 29 today, was leading a race. Leading the race on his birthday, which was very nice. For like probably three or four laps. You know, he was obviously running longer. It worked out as a strategy.
Yeah, he was very confident on those medium tires. I don't know if you remember that radio call where he was like, yeah, we're much better than everybody else. Just keep me out. Let me go.
He went way, he and Hulkenberg took those medium tires 20 laps. Nobody else went over 17, and most people were, kicking them off at 14, 15, and then
because the sprint race was 19 laps yesterday, right? So they knew that, you know, 19 is probably not ideal.
Yeah,
but I don't know whether it was the conditions, maybe it was just the rubber on the track, just meant that the tires lasted a little bit better today. Certainly, you know, everyone wanted to get off those mediums, but the guys that stuck on the mediums weren't too disadvantaged. But then obviously when they put the hard on, they really lasted a lot better than people thought they were going to do. Yeah. So it went from being an obvious two-stopper, just ask the Racing Bulls, who undercut everyone by about 25 laps, right, on the second stop. It was everyone just stayed out on that hard tire.
Only the two Racing Bulls and then Hamilton were the only ones who really tried for the two stopper.
And Hamilton, totally get it, because he was falling back behind Charles. He was probably going to get taken by Max anyway, and anyway Max, you know, came through anyway on Charles, so it was probably worth a shot to put a different set of tires on that you could then push. But I think he only made it up like 3 or 4 seconds.
Over the course of that stint,
he didn't really make the head roads.
Didn't work out for him at all. The other one was talking about broken wings. Was Tsunoda's wing just failed? Going down the straight, right?
That was so weird.
Yeah
it just looked, it came unstuck from itself.
It wasn't, obviously this is not the same, but do you remember, I think it was a Red Bull car. There's a shot of the Red Bull car going down the start-finish straight. I'm not quite sure which year it was. And the front end just explodes. The tires go off everywhere.
Was that Jean-Éric Vergne or was that Sebastian? I think it was Sebastian Buemi. Maybe Germany? I can't remember exactly.
Could have been a lot worse.
Hit the brakes. And the brakes just explode. That was...
Tires go everywhere, the things. But I mean, Yuki... Classic Yuki radio, you know, front wing damage, and he's like, "How? What did I do?" Like, well, it's broken
because it came just right after a bit of a tussle in the hairpin. Who was it with?
I don't know who was behind. It's a good question,
but it was a close call because he was right in front of the Hajar battle with
Lance, maybe.
So it was super weird because. Yeah, and it just, the whole thing came apart.
I don't know what the strange. If there'll be any fallout from that? Did the stewards not take, you know, you say unsafe car or something like that?
Well, they brought him in. They brought him in the next time around, right?
100%. But you're not supposed to send a car out that has bits that will break, but I guess that's hard to do. Nobody did that on purpose, but...
Yeah, but talking about other things falling apart, what's going on with Liam Lawson?
Oh, God. Poor guy.
Did you see Ted Kravitz interviewing Christian Horner, where he just basically said, "I thought you took Checo out of the car to put a faster driver in. What's going on?"
He asked the kind of questions that you would want to ask, you know, quite directly. There was no beating around the bush. Like, you screwed up. The guy is not
faster.
There's
some history there.
You've got a problem.
There's plenty of history between Ted Kravitz and the Red Bull.
I mean, have we all seen the interview with Albon? I don't know how many years ago he did this interview where he talks about being Max's teammate and how Max likes the car super sharp. He talks about how sharp he likes the front end and it's super like responsive and twitchy. And as a driver trying to play catch up, you're expected to be behind, but then you get into this cycle of the car gets sharper for Max. You lose confidence, you crash, you spin, and it's just a snowball effect. And
yeah, what he likened it to was if you turn the settings up on your mouse to 100%, where you just move it a tiny bit, and the mouse and the cursor just flies across the screen,
and try and play video games or something like that. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of Yuki, right? And everybody's talking about Yuki. It should have been Yuki instead of Liam. Does Yuki want that seat? Is it poisoned? Like, I mean, nobody's going to turn down a seat in Formula One. Yuki's got one already, but that seat is just hard, hard one to fill.
And is the car just so bad? I mean, so narrow in its operating window.
Right.
That Yuki's doing, I mean, he's not had the results for no real fault of his own both weekends, really.
Yeah.
I mean, like, last weekend, he had a good race and then they mess it up.
Sure.
And then this weekend, they were the only ones to do a two-stopper because they wanted to undercut the people and then no one else stopped. And then the front wing fell. So he's doing everything right. If he was to go into the big team, quote unquote.
Yeah.
What's that? I mean, this is his last year at Toro Rosso. Whatever they call them, RB.
Racing Bulls.
Racing Bulls,
yeah. Minardi, what the fuck, so he's on the lookout for a drive for next year. If he moves into Red Bull as Max's teammate and performs like Checo did, then what options does he have next year? If he stays in the RB... and he does the kind of racing that he's doing now, does he have better options next year? I don't know.
I mean, the RB, it just seems like they built a car for Max. In Max, they have this generational talent that can handle this car, but it's a unique situation. Like, nobody else can. And how much better does it make Sergio look? Like, we should all be just writing apology letters to Sergio, like how much we dragged him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his stock in the Cadillac camp right now I think he'd be a great fit for the Cadillac seat because he's a seasoned guy. He brings a lot of cash from Latin America, and that's going to be for an American team coming in, that's got to be he's definitely looking good now.
Yeah, I mean,
he's not doing anything at all, and his stock is up massively.
Sitting on the couch, and he's like getting his phone won't stop ringing. But I don't know, we'll see. But yeah, I mean, we all owe him an apology for sure that he was getting more out of that car than anybody else seems to be able to. Anyway,
yeah, but I mean, but qualified 18th in Australia, Liam. 20th in both the sprint and the Grand Prix. He pretty much last on the road outside of people that spun or had to do extra pit stops.
And then he
it's not looking
good. And
then
he said something like, I'm better than Yuki because I beat him in Formula 2 or something. And
Did you see what he said where he's going to tell, he told the team that he's going to now start taking driving seriously? Like, that's what Liam said. He said, I'm going to now start taking driving seriously.
Up until this point, I wasn't.
That's right.
Oh my God. Yeah, he needs to go through some PR training. But yeah, it's not looking good for Liam. They're talking about, something maybe happening after Japan.
Even before Japan. They're talking about even before Japan.
Getting rid of him for the next race.
But now I'm nervous for whoever sits in that seat, honestly.
I don't think they'll give it to Yuki.
Well, they can't give it to Hadjar. I think he's done really well for himself.
Call Danny.
Danny Rick. The prodigal son returns.
How do you imagine that phone call goes? What's up, Danny? It's Christian. F off, Christian. No. Wait. Give me a minute.
Oh dear. Well, who knows? I mean, maybe cool at the same time, around. Maybe cool thirds? Vettel? I don't know. But
I don't think that's entirely impossible.
But also, I mean, Carlos Sainz was tipped. Well, it was the person that I thought should have gone there. I'm kind of glad he went to Williams.
Yeah,
he's had it's not been plain sailing for him coming in. I mean, it took some disqualifications to get him into the points today. But no, I think I'd rather be in the Williams car than the Red Bull right now next to Max. That car just relevant. Doesn't look good. I mean, even Max, I mean, obviously Max got it up to what, fourth in the end. But this Max Verstappen, he finishes on the podium or he doesn't finish at all. Yeah. Right. And he finishes every race. So how does he finish fourth? The car, you know, that car's, I'd be curious to see what he could do in the V carb, actually.
Max?
Yeah. Uh-huh. What they should do is they should demote Max to the V carb. Well, I kind of said, maybe I've said this before.
You said like it for last year. Like, they should have done it
at the end of last year.
Yeah.
What they should have done was kick Checo out, put Max in the V carb, and put Liam Lawson and Yuki together in the Red Bull team and let them slug it out for the big seat this year. But, you know, they don't listen to the undercut like they should.
I mean, there's sister teams and then there's sister teams. I don't know if you could like move people around like that much. Then it's effectively...
Well, they're all Red Bull drivers,
They're all contracted to Red Bull.
Then you're talking about, not sporting rigs, but I don't know. Moving people around that much.
Well, they've done it before. They did it with Max and Kvyat and Albon. Pierre
and Albon and everyone, yeah.
They haven't seemed to care about that before. I feel like that's really most of it.
Yeah, oh, well, I guess Kimi had a decent race again, Antonelli, and he weirdly won Driver of the Day.
Yeah. But did they even put Driver of the Day up on screen and have people vote? I didn't even see it.
They did.
I didn't notice it either until it was finished.
So he won Driver of the Day. Toto came on the radio to tell him that he'd won it. And even he couldn't believe that he won it. And Toto just seemed to imply, well, you're a young, attractive guy. You've got a lot of young fans. I think it's your demographic that's helping you win these popular votes. So
that's creepy, Toto.
He didn't say it. That's my words. He just said it's your fans, you know, basically.
At that point in proceedings, it's like he'd qualified eighth and finished eighth.
Yeah.
Obviously now he's sixth, but it was not a spectacular, not a spectacular drive. No. I mean, my driver of the day is Ollie Bearman.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't, if it's not Piastri, right, for that's his awesome. first pole and win, you can make a very, very strong argument for Oscar. What more could he do? Yeah, it's either Behrmann or Piastri for sure. Not Kimi, unfortunately, as much as I'm a Kimi fan too, but.
I mean, it's not like Oscar is the old guy on the grid either. You would think he would have a pretty good contingent of fans to vote for him too, but.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Oscar's feeling good now. He was very upset after Australia, understandably so. But, you know, what will one race do? You know, he can't do much better than that. So he should be in a much better mindset going forward now.
Yeah, I mean, the top, 2, 3, and 4 in the Drivers' Championship are 2 points apart, with Lando's up 8 on Max in P2. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's close.
It's going to be good. Yeah.
Yeah. And I picked Williams to be ahead of Mercedes in 4 in the Constructors. They are in 4th, just tied and ahead of Ferrari.
What is it? The best Ferrari driver is actually
Ocon,
Ollie Ben.
Yeah, Ocon. Ocon's the best Ferrari driver right now, according to the standings.
One thing we haven't talked about, and as we've been talking about wheeling and dealing. Jason, I don't know how well you've watched every season of Formula One ever, so you know exactly who Eddie Jordan was, right? A lot of airtime and media paid to the late great Eddie Jordan, who passed away this week. Owner of the, you know, founder of the Jordan team, which became Midland, then Spyker, then Racing Point, and is now Aston Martin. He went into TV. I didn't really see much of his TV work, but the stuff that I did see was generally a bit annoying and cringeworthy. But as a guy, he was just like the life and soul of a lot of stuff, and you know, just a good old wheeler dealer type guy.
Yeah.
So a sad weekend in the sport, I guess. But Jason, I'm sure you've gone back and watched some of those stuff, but our listeners, if you want to go back and watch some races from like the 90s, Jordan is, you know, Jordan were a big team on a very little budget.
Oh yeah.
Back in the late 90s, they had no money at all.
They punched above their weight massively. Heinz Harald Frentzen won a couple of races in those yellow cars
in 99. Yeah.
He was like legitimately, they only won like 4 races total, but they were legitimately in the conversation for like championships back when you didn't have to win. People didn't win every single race like Max, you know, done the last few years when it was.
They were the first people to bring Schumacher into F1, right, Jordan?
Yeah. Both Schumachers, actually. Obviously, Michael replaced Bertrand Gachot, who was a Belgian driver, he basically maced a taxi driver and they kicked him out. I remember it in the papers. I remember exactly where I was when I heard about it. And so they brought in Schumacher and he like opened everyone's eyes, but very on Eddie Jordan, like he hadn't sewn him up properly on a contract. And he left the door open for him to go to Flavio, right? Back in Benetton.
He went to Benetton, yeah. Is that the race where, I'm not sure if it was Schumacher, if I'm misremembering, but is that the one where he unlapped himself, Schumacher, and he got somebody got really annoyed with him, or maybe I'm confusing that with another driver. I don't know.
Probably, because at any other time, he was in a Benetton. Wasn't going to be lapped in the first place.
And then it could have been another driver that did that. But that time with Jordan, he was always trying different things. Eddie always trying to get an angle, and Ferrari were dominating at that point. I think with Schumacher. Who were the top teams that Jordan were going up against? Was it Ferrari and
1999 was McLaren. Obviously, 1998 and 1999 were the 2 years that Mika Häkkinen won.
With Mika. Yeah, fighting.
Williams was still strong then, although that was when they went to the Winfield livery. They moved away from the Rothman stuff, and they really fell off in like the very late 90s. That was when Jenson Button first came in.
Right. Yeah, but Heinsald, Frentzen, Giancarlo Fisichella, maybe?
Jordan? Yeah, he went in, and then he went on to Renault as well, and then came back, and Fisichella was, he won in Interlagos when there was a big smash in the rain at the end, and they awarded the race to Kimi, and then they looked at it again, and they realized that when they actually, the red flag went out, Fisichella was leading. So at that point,
remember that,
but it was Imola the next race where they gave Fisichella the trophy. So I don't quite remember where in the calendar Brazil fell, because I don't know, for us, it always feels like Brazil's right at the end of the season, whether it's the season end, as it used to be before Abu Dhabi, or right there at the end. So like it is now.
The other thing about
Martin Brundle, wasn't his crash, that big crash in Australia, was in Australia.
That was in Jordan.
Flipped over and snapped in half.
That's the opening sequence in the F1 documentary called One. I know we've talked about it before.
The safety one,
through the 60s and 70s, which is a great documentary for anyone who...
The other thing I think about with the Jordans is that they were in the era when they were banning the tobacco sponsorship. You know, tobacco was a big, heavy sponsor. And so they were one of the first teams that they were still sponsored by Benson and Hedges, but they just renamed it to like Buzzin' and...
Hornets. And Buzzin' and Hornets.
Hornets, exactly.
And then there was another one as well, and I can't remember.
I forget what they were, all the different...
But it just kind of... I was going to say it's like Fawlty Towers, right? Where they kind of... The letters are all mixed up, but I'll have lost everyone.
Yeah. You're going way too niche there. I don't know. Yeah. I guess we're in a similar era now because there's alcohol advertising all over these cars, but it's the non-alcoholic versions that they're advertising, right? The Heineken 0.0, Peroni 0.0.
If only they had like full fat beer. I might have to get one.
They could advertise cigarettes that were not bad for you. Maybe that's what they need to do. But Eddie Jordan, great character, a sad loss for sure.
Yeah. And I don't think we have anything else really to talk about for the race, but I guess we should get into Coops.
Oh, Coops F1. So,
guess who didn't put their picks in this week?
Stuck with your picks from last week, huh?
Yeah.
Oh dear. Well, I drank the juice and went heavy Ferrari, and paid some price when I initially put in the result with the Ferrari scoring points, and then paid an even heavier price as they tumbled out the top 10. But so again, slightly depressed scores, slightly higher than last week, but 220 points from PK F1 2020 was the top score. Pablotus with 215 points. Some big movers, jumping up, hundreds of places, up and down. So we have a new leader, Liam Ducky, moved up 19 points to first on 331. Blum Tom in second, and our very own Jason in third, up 16 places.
Let's go.
So I'll have to have a quick look and see where I'm way down, I believe. Oh no, Nick. Okay, so Nick, you dropped 24 spots to 76th.
Oh,
so yeah, that's a tough.
If only I'd have put Lance Stroll in there.
I think I've coded it in to it assumes that it's not you clicking, somebody's hacked your account if you put Lance Stroll in the pits. We won't accept it. I'm down in 200. I did go up 33 places actually, but
nice 215th,
so not in with a shout, but. Yeah, I mean, definitely lower point scoring this year because obviously the races are a lot less predictable.
Absolutely.
With Haas getting in there, Williams showing up, teams that weren't in the top 10 last week. So all to play for in Japan in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, might have a new driver on the grid in 2 weeks. We don't know.
Could do. could do. What's the skinny on Japan? You were there last year, Nick. It's the only circuit with a figure eight design.
Yeah. Yeah. And iconic circuit.
Yeah.
The crazy Japanese fans with their hats.
Who is that guy with the Ferrari hat? Yeah. The sort of working aerodynamic hats. Yeah.
Yeah. It was very much the Max Verstappen show last year. Yuki did score a point, I think.
Right.
But I think he's definitely not going to be satisfied with just solitary point.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're definitely going to want to show up and have a strategy, a proper strategy that's like going to get the V-carbs in the points a little bit more. Because as of right now, they've got a much quicker car than their points tally says. So,
the weather can be changeable in Japan, although they moved it earlier in the season because it used to be a lot wetter.
It used to be in September, so there could be a lot of rain. Now they've moved it to April. And
should
the weather's
be drier,
very nice
but,
when I was there.
Know, but I prefer the more exciting wet Australia race than the drier Chinese race, but we'll see what happens.
He has to give up the corner. I had to bounce ahead. What is wrong with these people?
Thanks for listening to the Undercuts review of the 2025 Chinese Grand Prix. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and join us for our next race review of the 2025 Japanese Grand Prix. We'll see you there.